We now begin the third Masechta in Seder Kodshim, and this is called Maseches Chulin, which ironically, the name itself means something which is the opposite of Kodshim. Chulin deals with the laws that apply to animals that aren't Kodshim, that aren't consecrated, or part of the, that's with some specific Kedusha for temple procedures and like, but rather basically for consumption, human consumption, eating them. So that's Maseches Chulin, and there are a variety of mitzvahs that have to do with the consumption of animals and how it's done properly according to halacha. The starting place to understand Chulin is that the animal world, the animal kingdom, is divided into five categories as far as halachic categories are concerned. These categories really have very little overlap or resemblance or analog to the, you know, the modern scientific taxonomic way in which animals are classified. But in any case, I still have to just sort of put that aside and think how the Torah sees these animals. So they really fall into five categories. The first category is behemoths. Behemoths are domestic livestock. These are animals that are raised essentially with amongst humans, and they essentially are going to serve for human food. Now, the kosher, the edible livestock really fall into simply, you know, two or three subcategories. We're talking cattle, meaning cows, but this would include things that are like buffalo or yaks, let's say, as well as goats and sheep and their relatives. So like, say, like an ibex would be also included in that. And those are the animals that are behemos, that are kosher. And what makes them kosher is they have two specific signs. The first is that they're male geira, they chew their cud, that means the food they eat goes into a series of stomachs and comes out and they rechew it a second time before it goes down for further processing. And the second is that they're mafrise parsa, that they have entirely split hooves. Okay, so for example, a pig, which is certainly a behemoth, domesticated animal, but pigs do not chew the cud. And say horses, which do not have split hooves, or camels also, which appear to, you know, chew the cud, but they also do not have fully split hooves, so they're not kosher for halacha. Then there are other large or sizable land mammals. Okay, those are called chayos. Okay, so sometimes a behemoth is a subcategory of a chaya, but we will differentiate here between behemoths which are domesticated and chayos which are undomesticated animals. So any like sizable land mammal is going to be a chaya. So that would be both, you know, like a lion and a giraffe and so on. The kosher chayos for edible, for human consumption, are the ones that, again, are to the cud and have split hooves. The Torah enumerates exactly seven of these. Their exact identity isn't clear, but amongst them, like an ayal and a tzvi, so there we're talking things like a deer or a gazelle. Those are kosher. A giraffe tends to be kosher as well. Then you have sheretzim. Now, sheretz is a land creature, but it is small and kind of goes close to the ground, as Rashi puts it. So that would mean certainly invertebrates, so things like a snail or a worm or a spider, etc. But also even like, you know, vertebrates that are close to the ground, reptiles, snakes, lizards, as well as amphibians like frogs. And also small mammals, so like a rat, okay, or a mouse. I don't know where to draw the line. If you're going to ask me what's with a Komodo dragon, that's a very big reptile, or a capybara, that's the largest of the rodents. Is that considered a sheretz or a chaya? I don't know. But in any case, what sheretzim essentially are all not kosher, with the exception of four types of grasshopper or locust. For specific types the Torah enumerates, those actually are kosher. So the only kinds of sheretzim that you could eat if you had a mesorah and had to make them kosher is the grass, some specific types of grasshoppers or locust. I'll discuss the difference in those two things now. Sheretzim also have an important halachic significance, really isn't so important to our mesechta here, but the shemona sheretzim, eight of the sheretzim, eight specific enumerated small terrestrial creatures, when their carcasses, when they're dead, they convey tumma through direct contact of maga, the flesh, their meat does. Now, this in contrast to all the other types of sheretzim out there, which do not convey tumma. Okay, so if you have, you know, a dead snake on the ground, that dead snake or dead octopus or whatever. I don't know. These, it's not an example, an octopus, whatever. That animal does not convey tumah, okay? Even though it's dead. Just the eight shirat and the specific eight shirat enumerated, they do. Okay. Then you have birds, ophos. These are things essentially that fly. Okay. The Torah says there are 24 types of non-kosher birds, which means really that all the other birds really are kosher. The problem is we sort of lost the masorah of what the 24 birds are, and therefore we eat birds basically just on a masorah and traditional what are the kosher birds and not. Okay. And finally, you have dagim. Dagim are aquatic creatures. That's why I shouldn't have said octopus when I did. In any case, so all creatures of the sea are considered dagim. That would include, say, like whales and dolphins, as well as, you know, sharks and, you know, good old-fashioned bony fish, and other little creatures as well. I don't know, like crustaceans, crabs, and starfish and the like. Okay, the dagim, what makes a dug kosher is that it has snapir and kaskeses. That means it has fins and scales, which means, for example, like a shark, which is or a ray does not have a scale, so they're not kosher, and a dolphin the same. But other, you know, typical bony fish that you know and love, those are the ones that have the fins and scales. Okay, so those are the essentially the five categories of creatures in the chulin we have to worry about. Behemos, domesticated, chayos, undomesticated, but large terrestrial animals, shiratzim, the small terrestrial mammals, the ophos, the ones that fly, and the dagim, the ones that swim. Okay, now, for amongst the kosher animals, let's focus now here essentially on the chayos and behemos. So they are certain halachas that apply to how they're consumed, okay? First of all, there's a prohibition of eating an animal without it having proper ritual slaughter, shechita. If one eats an animal, eats a limb or part of an animal, if that was from the living creature without ritually slaughter, having been ritually slaughtered, that's called eiver min achai, taking a limb from a living creature, and that's a prohibition from the Torah. It's actually a prohibition that applies, as you sure probably know, to non-Jews as well. So every animal that you're going to eat needs to have shechita. Now, shechita, ritual slaughter, when it comes to a chaya and a behema, it's defined as the severing of, like a smooth cut, a knife, of the two simanim, the two pipes that go down the throat. One is called the kane, one is called the veshet. In English, kane means the windpipe, okay? And the veshet is the food pipe or the esophagus. Okay, those are two pipes that basically connect the base in the back of the throat, one down to the lungs, one down to the stomach. Both have to be severed, the majority, to be kosher shechita. And when it comes to birds, you have to do, shechita requires severing one or the other. You don't have to do both, okay? So that's the, once that happened, the animal now is at least called a shechuta, it's been ritually slaughtered. Every animal that doesn't get ritual slaughter, essentially, of shechita, is a nevela waiting to happen. A nevela means essentially an animal carcass of an animal that hasn't received the proper ritual slaughter. So essentially, every animal is destined to be a nevela. The only way you can save it from being a nevela is by giving it shechita before it dies. And just because it got shechita before it died doesn't make it a kosher animal to eat. An animal that has a defect in it, which essentially would curtail its life, you know, has a hole in its heart or something, and it's not going to live because of that. So then that makes it what's called a trefa. An animal, literally trefa means kind of torn, as in like, you know, got mauled by a lion or a bear or something. But the point is, if it has some mortal defect, then that's considered a trefa. There's a specific list of and enumerates what these issues are. And that applies to these creatures, including chayos and behemos and ophos. All of them have the issue of trefa. There's, when it comes to the fish and the chagavim, the certain, you know, the certain grasshoppers that are kosher. So there's no issue of eiver min achai. You can, you know, swallow goldfish live or a grasshopper live and not be over the isurim of eiver min achai. You probably want a separate isur derais of bal tishak, so if not to be disgusting, but that's a side point. So then certainly there's no requirement for like shechita on a fish or shechita on a grasshopper. It's not a thing. It's only shechita for the behemos, the chayos, and the ophos. Okay, now, after the ritual slaughter is done, there are still a number of parts of the animal which cannot be eaten. They're forbidden to be eaten, so they're not kosher parts of the animal. First and foremost is the blood. Okay, the blood of the animal is the where its nefesh, its life is, and eating the blood is prohibited. The dam ha-nefesh, the blood that essentially is like spurting out of the animal once you slaughter it, let's say, that spurting blood, actually to consume that is Isser Kares, is a severe penalty of divine excision. That's the blood that would be going on the Mizbeach if it were a Korban. But then other blood that essentially is in the body is also forbidden if it moves from its place, meaning if it moves from its place after it's killed, that's also forbidden as a generic lav. When one cooks an animal, so the blood spreads and the flavor moves, so that makes it, you know, not kosher. And therefore, if you're gonna cook meat in water as opposed to roasting over fire, in which case you actually want to remove the blood because it kind of stays in place as it cooks. But if you're gonna boil it or something, so you first must remove the blood. That's done through salting. Okay, melicha, salting of the animal to remove the blood. What's left behind after the salting is considered not halachic blood. When you look at when you go to the shop and you purchase, you know, your lamb chops and in the nice, you know, styrofoam package with, you know, cellophane around it. So there's often red juice at the bottom. That red juice is not blood. First of all, it's not halachic blood because it's already been salted. It's also really not even biological blood. It's myoglobin. It's something else. That red is a different protein, probably or mostly. In any case, so after you remove the blood, you also have to remove the certain hard fats around the abdominal cavity called chelev. There's chelev as opposed to the fat, you know, it's kind of marbled into the muscle. Like when you eat a steak, you see this, like, you know, the white bits amongst the brown muscle meat. Not that. That's shuman. That's permitted fats. But they're essentially draping fats that go over some internal organs. You can peel them. You could peel them off in a way. They look different. They feel different. They're hard and they peel. Those abdominal fats, chelev, are forbidden. Again, also under penalty of karas, a very severe penalty. And those are the specific list of chelev, is those chelevim are the ones that go on the mizbeach also if it would be a korban. Okay, finally you have the gid hanasha, the sciatic nerve, that chayos and behemos, mammals, have a nerve that runs essentially down the leg, the whole length of the leg, and has to be removed. It's called trabering in Yiddish. It's called nikur in Hebrew. And again, for the animal to kosher, you have to remove it. It's quite a significant nerve. And a cow, its base looks like a belt. Okay, it's like a leather belt. It's big. In any case, so those are the parts, the blood, the dam, the chelev, the forbidden fats, and the gidhanasha, that sciatic nerve, must be removed. Midraban, there's a bunch of ancillary stuff to the primary sciatic nerve that also must be removed, which makes it quite tricky to remove. And therefore, Ashkenazim in general they say they've lost the tradition of how to remove the gidhanasha, and therefore, in general, Ashkenazim don't eat a hindquarter of, you know, of cows, etc., like a filet mignon. Although many poskim understand that if you'd have a proper tradition from a Sephardi, you know, or Yemenite, whatever it is, and they say it's kosher and they've removed it properly, would be permitted to a Ashkenazi as well. Fine. Now, besides removing that forbidden stuff and removing the salt, so that food is now, so to speak, ready to eat. There's some other, I'll call it, ancillary mitzvahs that apply to the consumption of animals. Okay, let me just enumerate them here, and then I'll discuss, to wrap up, the structure of the masechta. You see these things all come into play and how it plays out. The first is the Torah prohibits the shechita, the slaughtering of mother and child on the same day. That's referred to as oso ve'esbeno. The word oso sounds like a masculine, it's referring to the mother. It's referring to the word before the shor and the seh. In any case, so you can't slaughter b'shor aseh, o sov es b'no, lo sishach, lo sishchatu b'yom echad. You can't slaughter them both on the same day. They do two separate days to slaughter the two, mother and child. Second of all, there's a mitzvah of kisui hadam, of covering the blood. So there's a mitzvah to cover some of the blood that comes from the, you know, cover the blood with some dirt, the animal that comes from the animal after you slaughter it. We're referring here specifically to ofos, birds, and chayos, wild animals. There is no mitzvah of kisui adam for cows, goats, and sheep. Okay? But putting some dirt on the blood of a chicken, let's say, is a requirement, the mitzvah, the Torah, the bracha, and everything. In addition, you have certain parts that must be given to a kohen. And this is, we're talking here, not kudshim, we're talking chulin. So every cow, goat, or sheep that you slaughter, there are gifts that go to the Kohen. Specifically, it's called the Zroa, Lechayayim, and Keva. Zroa, essentially the right front leg, essentially. The Lechayayim, basically the tongue and part of the mouth around the tongue. And the keva is one of the stomachs. It's called the abomasum. It's the third stomach, essentially, of the animal, the ruminant, you know, the cow, goat, sheep. Now, that keva is the place where the enzymes are produced to curdle milk. So actually, if you're going to be making old school cheese, like in biblical times, etc., you need the keva. So that keva, that gift to the Kohen, isn't just that you can eat meat, so you actually can have cheese. Okay? Then you have reishis hageiz, which is the requirement that if you, this is not really about eating, but when you shear a sheep, you have to give like first shearings to a Kohen also, it's separate gifts to the Kohen. And finally, there's a mitzvah of shiluach hakein, which is something a little different, but essentially, before taking the mother bird, that one happens upon and like on a in its nest, whatever it is, one must first send away the mother bird before taking the offspring, meaning the eggs or the chicks. Now, the structure of the Masechta is as follows. The first four, this is Masechta Chulin again. In total, we're going to have 12 prakim, 12 chapters. The first four essentially deal with Shechita, how Shechita is done, and what animals need Shechita, etc. And then we'll have the fifth parak deals with Oso Vespino, the slaughtering of the mother and child on the same day. The sixth parak deals with Kisui Hadam, obligation to cover the blood of a chaya and a bird. Then you have, in the seventh parak, the halachs of the Gid HaNasha. The eighth parak deals with Basar Bachalav, something I didn't discuss up to now in the introduction, which is the prohibition of cooking meat from a kosher animal, cow, goat, sheep, with milk from a kosher animal. That's forbidden. When one cooks it together, the cooking itself is asar, and the product of, like basar b'chalav, meat cooked with milk together, that product is forbidden not just to eat, but even to get hana from, to get any economic benefit from, which is quite unusual. Most things are forbidden, like, you know, pork chops, you can't eat them, but you could, if you happen upon pork chops, you could sell them to your neighbor Chris, and that's no problem. Okay? But basar b'chalav not. If you accidentally make basar b'chalav, you can't even feed it to your own dog, because you're essentially getting benefit from not having to buy him now kibble. Okay, so basar b'chalav is the topic of the eighth parak. Then, at the end there, we'll talk about also the chalav and the blood in the eighth parak. In the ninth parak, essentially, we talk about tumah and how that works with meat. Okay, topical to itself when we get there, Bez Hashem. The tenth parak deals with the matnas kahuna, so that means the gifts to kohanim, which from a living creature, you have two kind of components. You have the zera l'chayim and keva, which is the first, essentially that's the 11th, that's the 10th parak. And then the 11th parak deals with the reishis hageiz, the first shearings that go of the from the flockings from the sheep. It's a short parak, just called Mishnayos. And then finally, the 12th parak is shiluach hakein, the sending away of the mother bird from its nest before taking the chicks or the egg. Okay, so that is the structure introduction to Maseches Chulin. Now, Be'ez Hashem, we begin the Masechta in earnest.